Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, our adventures near and far, as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
And sometimes not the best parts of our culture, as I'll be talking about later. But first, we got a lot to cover, so let's just go right into what's been going on. So what's the big thing this week has been?
My mom's here. Yay.
Yay. Grandma's here. So those of you who listen to our other podcasts, Let's Talk or Secrets of Technology, will have heard Melanie's mom, Pat Scott. She does the Secrets of Tech as a regular panelist, and she's a mama nerd. So grandma has all the gadgets with her.
Yes. My mom has been into tech stuff my entire life. We were the first people I knew who had a personal computer, and she's always been an early adopter of technology. And when I met you, it was kind of fun because, like, you're just about as geeky as she is.
Yes, we get along very well. We have fun conversations about tech. And she's also a big sci-fi and fantasy nerd as well. And so lots in common.
Yeah.
So really, really nice. And so it's great to have grandma here because the kids are of course, over the moon. They love having grandma around and we do things with her. And it's very nice to have her here.
And she's here from Texas.
So. Yes, she's come up. Yes, she lives in Texas. So she's come up from Texas for the for New England fall, also called summer part deux in Texas or part three, actually, the baconing. So it's a nice escape for her from the long Texas summers, which is nice. So before we get into what we've been doing, we get a little bit of a follow up. I wanted to follow up on something we talked about last time, which is the Mighty Jack books. We talked about or I don't know if it was last time or a couple episodes ago, but this series of graphic novels by this artist and author, Ben Hatke, Mighty Jack and Zeta the Space Girl books. And our kids love these books. They're really great books. Lots of fun, really well aimed at that. Oh, you know, grammar school, middle school, young adult, you know, teen demographic.
They're good for all ages, really.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we enjoy them, too. So Melon, you like the books a lot. We talked about them before. But we had some sad news last week. First, some news. So he's well known in Catholic circles, put it that way. He's right.
Yeah, Ben Hackey's, well, at least I first heard about him from, like, Catholic homeschooling families. But he's big. He's published by mainstream publishers, and he's not not only known in Catholic circles.
Right. But a lot of Catholics that we know of him and his books, right?
Right.
And he's got a family of a bunch of kids, I guess, right?
I don't remember.
I don't remember how many kids they had, but they had at least one daughter. Her name was Ida. She was four. And as you can guess from past tense, something tragic has happened. We first heard last week that someone had posted just asking for prayers for a family that they knew. Their four-year-old daughter was kicked by a horse and was really badly injured and was in the hospital. And if everyone could pray for her and her family.
But almost immediately, through the grapevine, we found out that she was Ben Hackey's daughter. And so we specifically asked the kids to pray for her because they really have been touched by his books. And therefore, it feels like his family is kind of an extended part of our family.
Yeah. And so as the prayer, you know, prayers started going around and some more news. And they got to a point, I guess, where there was such severe trauma to the brain that, you know, they basically, the decision we made, if nothing improves by a particular point, you know, so this past week, that they would turn off the machines, that there was no hope, that like there was no brain function, I gather. And so that's what happened, is they ended up turning off the machines and that were sustaining her body and letting her pass in peace, which I can't imagine. Like one of the kids was saying, like, oh my gosh, that must be so sad for them. I think it was Ben. And I was saying, I can't imagine really how sad that is. Yeah. I like, just to the pain of that, it would tear me like from the inside out. I just said, my heart really goes out to them because it's just so awful. One of the responses has been to pile on bad to worse is apparently when they came out of the, you know, he's an artist. He lives an author. He lives on a artist and author's salary, which is apparently, I'm going to guess, not very much in the grand scheme of things. I mean, they probably get by, but you know, it's like a lot of us, they're not rolling the dough. So they come out of the hospital having had their daughter, you know, machines just turned off. And having said goodbye to their daughter, they come out to the car and it's dead. Like, won't start, won't go anywhere. It's a dead vehicle. And so some friends have put together a GoFundMe to, or a crowdsourcing. It's a different site. It's not GoFundMe, but it's givesendgo.com. And I'll put a link in the show notes to it to help cover their medical bills and burial expenses, and perhaps help them to, you know, get a new vehicle as well, because, you know, the family has been devastated. And the medical bills, I mean, apparently they had to have, they had helicoptered her to the hospital. She was in the pediatric ICU for a few days. I mean, the bill, you know, we talked about our medical bills lately. Like, I've seen what the medical bills can be for a helicopter, you know, a life flight. They can be tens of thousands of dollars they can charge. It's crazy. But, you know, when in the moment, you're like, I don't care what it costs. Take my child and save their life, you know, to do whatever it takes. But then, you know, people are saddled with that. And so there's probably tens of thousands of dollars of that. And so their goal was $100,000 to raise for that, which sounded like a lot. But they've hit it already. But I'm sure they could use more help if people were interested, if you know the Hadkeys and were fans of the work and you wanted to support them. Of course, you could also buy their books and
definitely.
And, you know, if you've already got them, buy another set and give them to friends or whatever. So I'll put links to the GoFundMe and, you know, the crowdsourcing and the books themselves in the show notes on our website at sqpn.com/bets, BETTS. So that's the update from that. Very sad, but, you know, and of course, most important, your prayers would be much appreciated and would go a long way. In fact, someone was saying that the Hadkeys have said that they felt so much peace in the midst of this, and it's got to be because of all the prayers. That's a very common thing I've heard from people who've had experience that prayer, the crowd prayer for them. So, so that's that, this past week. So, more about what we've been doing, I wanted to follow up on is, so with Grandma in town, we want to, you know, kind of do things with her. We actually can kind of saving some things up. I think we mentioned last time that we wanted to go apple picking, which, is our sort of annual September activity, right?
Yeah.
You know, we tend to go, you know, I mean, that's when the apples are available, but we like to go, and we didn't get to go last year because of our big trip.
Right. Last year we were doing a grand road trip across the country, and so we did not go apple picking.
No, by the time we got back, we were like, no, I want to stay in the house for the next, you know, month.
Right. Well, we were recovering from sickness, and we were just exhausted, and...
So with Grandma in town, we decided to go to our favorite apple orchard, which is... I always get it wrong. It's not
Berlin Orchards.
Berlin Orchards. There's two towns that are known for apples in Massachusetts, Bolton and Berlin, and I always mix them up. So Berlin Orchards is a great orchard if you're in the area, owned by this great Catholic family.
The Bernies.
Jerry Bernie is the dad, is from Ireland. He's from Roscommon. Yeah, I had it right the first time and then showed how my ignorance by questioning it. But really great people. So we drove out there on Friday. Oh, that's the best. So we used to go on the weekends because, of course, when I was working in an office job, I couldn't get away. And it would be crowded, like Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, still fun, but...
Yeah.
But, like, you could stand in line. I think one year we stood in line for cider donuts for, like, half an hour.
Right. And then it was like, you get six donuts. That's it. No more. Because they had so many, and they were, like, making them as fast as they could and running out. And we're, like, we're seven people. I mean, at the time, we would get donuts for Lucy before we knew of her allergy or whatever. I remember once trying to get more than the allotted amount, and it was like, no, like, you can't have it. I'm like, okay. So it would be the normal lines that you'd have, but we went on Friday, and we were like, there was like two other people in the orchard, like two other cars while we were there.
Yeah, I didn't really see anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, there were some people that were in the orchard when we were out there, and I saw a couple cars in the parking lot, at different points, and it was really nice. And it doesn't, it's kind of funny. We drive an hour out there.
And it takes like 10 minutes to pick your apples.
Yeah, you get a bag worth of apples. Half a bushel bag of apple, you know, to put the apples in. It takes, you know, you walk all the ones we like are the Honeycrisp, and they're way in the back. So we walk all the way back, which is a nice walk.
That's actually more satisfying, because if the ones that we liked were like right near the front, you'd like drive up, park, get out of the car, walk 10 feet, pick apples, get back in the car, and then like you're done, and the whole process would take like minutes.
Right. That's true. So yeah, we did.
We got a nice stroll through the orchard.
We did. So we walked back, which was, and it was nice. It was a beautiful day, like perfect weather, blue sky, not a cloud, 70 degrees. It was a little warm in the orchard, as you know, expected, the sun and all, but a nice, beautiful day. And we walked back, picked our apples full. Everyone has to, you know, you have to eat an apple straight off the tree. That's just a thing.
It's so good.
It's like the best. It's the platonic ideal of apple.
Yeah.
And then, back to the car. And then Bella had her heart set on what? On a particular variety of apple.
Ginger gold?
Ginger gold, right. Which was at the other end of the orchard.
Well, yeah, we picked our Honeycrisps. Then we went to go get the ginger gold. And it turned out that we'd walked all the way back, and they weren't ripe yet.
The ones on the
trees. The ones on the trees, for the U-pick trees.
Yeah, so that was a little disappointing.
So we ended up picking something, another variety, I think Cortland or something, that we weren't as excited about, but we weren't going to walk all the way back to the Honeycrisps at that point.
Right. But the nice thing is we went back to the farm store, and the lady operating the counter, we told her this tale of woe, Melanie's mom did. And she said, "Oh, you know what? Just take a couple out of that bag over there." So there was some. They had some Honeycrisp, not Honeycrisp, the ginger gold, in the farm store, and they let us take some because Bella had wanted them, which is nice.
That was very sweet.
We also got peaches, fresh peaches,
and cider donuts.
So, no,
kettle corn.
Not just like half a dozen cider donuts. We got half a dozen when we got there, and then a half dozen more to take home.
Well, yeah, because, you know, we were hungry and we wanted to have a snack to sustain us.
Yes.
While we were picking.
That's right.
But then, you know, you want some later, too.
You want some to go, right. So we did get some take home, and the kids had some, as a dessert after dinner. And then a gallon of cider, which is really good. So, like, just, like, fresh out of the fridge, ice cold cider, so good.
Yeah, I'm always torn, like, which is better? Ice cold cider, this it's nice and cold on your throat, or like hot mulled cider with spices, like nice and warm. But it's a little bit too warm yet.
Yeah, I say why choose
mulled cider?
Yes, cold cider for the warm weather, hot cider for the cold weather.
Yeah, but sometimes you just kind of want both.
For me to have that hot cider with the cinnamon and the other clove, a little bit of spices in it, it has to be cold. But I think that has to do with my memories of having hot cider, like at La Salette during the Christmas season.
Whereas I'm from Texas, so like we don't really always get cold. So you enjoy the fall Christmassy sorts of, like, you enjoy the seasonal treats regardless of what the weather is like.
So right? I can just picturing now, like, you know, it's, oh, Mom, it's 50 degrees out. Please mull some cider for me as I put on my light jacket. Is that sound about right?
I decline to comment.
Yes. I got the eye roll, I think. So they had the cider, and then they also had animals, which was fun. You were tired. So
llamas and chickens, yeah. And
you hung out by the car. I took the kids up by the animals.
So, yeah, I'd had a very, 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 very early morning.
Ben woke up
with
asthma attack.
So,
I took them up to the hill to there were chickens, there were goats, there were sheep, there were donkeys, a couple of donkeys. There's a couple llamas. No, one llama. No, not llama. Sorry. Alpaca. I always mix those up. I mean, let's be honest. They're nearly the same thing. So alpaca and an emu, which was fun.
The emu is new.
Yes, it's new. Its name is Edelman after the New England Patriot player. The lady in the store said, like, the alpacas and other animals are all named for things for, like, you know, Daisy, and they're named by the girls. The emu is named by the boys. Edelman. And
I had to have the Patriots reference explained to me because I didn't.
Yes. I was like, why is Edelman a, like, particularly boy name? So, yes, I had to explain it to her. And then they had pigs, those pigs stunk. They were smelly.
Pigs are smelly.
Yeah. And so then, yeah, that was it. We were there for hour, maybe. I mean, we kind of extended our stay, really. The one thing you don't get on the weekday is you don't get the hay wagon ride.
Yeah, the hay ride is nice. I mean,
yeah.
It's a tractor pulling a big wagon full of hay, and you it's not a very long drive.
Yeah, it's like they're taking you back out
to
the
orchard. Couple minutes.
Whereas this time they said drive out there and you park at the orchard. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's fun for the kids to go in the hay wagon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so it's a like I said, it was about an hour drive each way. It wasn't a bad drive. It felt like it was a pretty speed. It didn't feel like we were in a lot of traffic or whatever.
I slept all the way home, so it felt really short to me.
Yes, because we put on the audiobook of The Coup Club, the Arthur Ransom book.
I'm so mad that I slept through that, too. I love that book.
We've talked about the listening to The Swallows on Amazon series on audiobook before in the car. So that's this is a continuation of that series. And again, it's just really good. It's just so the idyllic childhood. I want to go back and live my childhood in the Arthur Ransom books.
Yeah, totally.
So good. We stopped for lunch at the coolest McDonald's ever, apparently. They had the order at the kiosk at the big screen by touching the big screen.
No. The cool thing was the touch tables.
Yes, they had tables where when you touch the top, it the dots on the table change color. It was touch sensitive, I guess, or whatever. But the kids were all, like, freaking out over it, which is fun. So that was Friday. Sunday which is today as we're recording it. So Sunday morning was the Bella and Ben served their first mass. I talked with this last time that they'd been training, and Father Michael had told them that, you know, no rush. Whenever you're ready, we'll just keep doing this.
I expected it to be a couple more weeks before they were ready.
Well, we had another training session last Wednesday, and he said to them, you know, I'm going to be celebrating mass at the parish, because we have three parishes, and so he has to rotate among them. I'm going to be celebrating mass at this parish on Sunday if you want to serve at this mass. And then they're like, And he's like, but no worries, no worries, no. And they're like, no, we want to do it. They had to, like, they convinced him that they wanted to do it. He immediately regretted suggesting it, but they're like, no, I want to do it. So they were going to do it. Ben said to me Saturday night, he said that, I'm not really nervous. I'm a little nervous, but I'm not really nervous. I said, that's good. I said, I'd be worried if you weren't nervous at all. He's like, why? So I kind of made a mistake by putting, like, should I be nervous? Like, no, what I mean is if you aren't nervous at all, you I would think that you were putting seeing it as important as it is.
Taking it seriously.
That's what I was trying to say. Take it seriously as you should. But you're obviously taking it very seriously.
Ben takes things seriously.
He takes Mass very seriously.
He does.
He's a boy who loves Mass and loves receiving Jesus in the Eucharist.
And gets very distressed when he can't.
There was one time where he was sick during Mass.
We talked about that.
Yeah, and we had to get the deacon to come back after at the end of Mass and bring him the
Eucharist. Oh, yeah, that time.
Yeah, there was one time where during Mass he was that a nosebleed or something?
Oh, yeah, he had a horrendous nosebleed right during the consecration, and it was like, it was bad. It was yeah. A gusher, and so when it came time for communion, I just stayed in the pew with him because there was no way he was going to be able to receive communion, and he was sort of crying because he was so upset. And, you know, thank God, God bless our deacon, because after Mass, he came over and he brought.
Well, he saw how distressed Ben was and weren't checking on him to see what's wrong and if he was OK. And then we told him why. And he was, I mean, obviously the deacon was like, this boy loves Jesus in the Eucharist. And so he immediately went to get the Eucharist for Ben, which was very nice. And Ben was very happy. But so this week they had the Mass. And so what we thought was going to happen was going to be Bella and Ben. And then there's this lady, Bernadette, parishioner. She's a extraordinary minister of the Eucharist. She would help guide them during the Mass to make sure they were doing it. Well, it turns out that through these other two girls who sometimes serve at our Mass, they're from the Cape Verdean community. And apparently, as Father said, these girls, who do a very good job, by the way, they serve every Sunday at the noon Mass. I think that's the Cape Verdean Mass.
That's the Cape Verdean Mass, yeah.
That some weeks they get up early to serve at the 8 Mass, the 10 Mass, and then the noon Mass.
Three Masses.
These girls are
awesome.
I mean, that's pretty impressive. So they were there, which was, I think Father must have asked them to come. And they were there to help guide Bella and Ben through it, which was great.
And they were very kind.
They were very kind, very helpful. Like, I would love to get, like, all of these kids, like Bernadette's son, was it Nick, who's a Eagle Scout. I remember him. He's now in college, but he was such a good kid. Like, all of these kids in this parish community are such good kids, I have to say.
Yeah.
They're very impressive. And all the ones we've encountered. So very impressive. So it went very well. Very excited. They got to light the candles, which, you know, that was one of my favorite parts of being an altar boy.
And Bella got to ring the bells.
That was the second favorite thing that I loved of being an altar boy. The third thing was the incense, which they didn't do at this Mass.
Which is a very good thing, because I'm not sure Ben could have handled the incense.
Yes.
He would have been, like, needing the inhaler and...
Yeah, I have to say something to Father. I think I said something in passing when we were talking about the censer, but I might have to mention it again to him.
I would, because both of them are asthmatic, and I think that it being near the altar with the incense might send Ben to the hospital.
To get a nebulizer up there.
Yeah, that would
be a mask on his face during Mass. So it went very well. Not too much. So there's that part of the Eucharistic prayer where the priest puts his hands over the cup, where he calls down the power of the Holy Spirit to sanctify the gifts. It's not the consecration. It's called the epiclesis. And he wants those altar servers to ring the bells once when he does that. The problem is from where Bella had the bells, which actually seems appropriate. Bella with the bells. She can't see his hands. There's a chair between her and him. And I told her, well, why don't you move down? She's like, I can't. It's too, like, I don't know. Maybe she could, but she doesn't. But she's nervous. But so we'll have to see about that. But it went really well. I was really excited. What I hope is that both Sophie and Anthony will see them doing it and become more interested in doing it. I think Sophie would be great at it, but Sophie does not like being in front of people. She's really good at following a procedure, which is what this essentially is following a process and procedure. But being in front of a group of people makes her really nervous. We'll see. This past week at Scouts, she was in charge of the color guard, the opening and closing ceremonies. So she had to, you know, give the order to salute and color guard, post, and all that sort of stuff that they do. So I thought that was very good. I was very happy with that. All right. So that's what's been going on. That brings us sort of up to date. This is Dom Bettinelli of the StarQuest Production Network, and we need your help. Over the past year, we've grown by leaps and bounds. Some of our podcasts, like Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, are among the most popular shows we've ever produced. But that success is in danger. Creating a dozen shows has caused our expenses to rise, and right now, we aren't making ends meet. We must reach the financial break-even point if we're going to continue. If our reserves are depleted, we'll have to cut back many of our shows. We might have to shut down entirely. That's why it's crucial we hear from you right now, please go to sqpn.com/give and click the Become a Patron button to make your monthly pledge. If you're already a supporter, please consider increasing your pledge. The need is urgent, so please go to sqpn.com/give. That's sqpn.com/give. So let's talk about what we've been eating.
This week we've been busy, and well, my mom's been here, so
there's been a few nights of pizza and takeout Jamaican.
Yeah, we had jerk, we had pizza.
You made a pot roast in the Instant Pot.
I love pot roast in the Instant Pot.
Oh my gosh, so good. So we had talked about the pork shoulder, the shredded pork, the other time. This time was the pot roast, which is a beef roast. And it's just so tender,
good.
So quick, and it's so simple. It's just the chuck roast,
yep.
Salt, pepper, you know, oil, garlic, onion. You know, what do you put
salt
in there?
Yeah, salt. I salted and peppered the meat, and then browned it in the oil, sautéed it, and then I cut up an onion and threw that in there. Some soy sauce and Worcestershire sauce.
Right.
Some red wine, like maybe a third of a cup or something, whatever was left in the bottle. I just kind of glugged it in there. And I think I did some like thyme and bay leaves, maybe.
Yep.
And then just like, you know, closed it up and cooked it. And
you didn't put vegetables in this time.
I didn't.
Because usually there's carrots and potatoes in there.
Well, but they usually get too mushy by the time the meat's done. So what I did is I actually pulled out the meat, put the Instant Pot on
manual or
saute.
Okay. Yeah.
And boiled down the juices a little bit. And then I threw in some mushrooms, carrots, potatoes, and cooked it for like another 5 minutes.
Yeah. So they were still crispy, but you know, they still had a bite to them. They were cooked, but still had a bite. They weren't soft and mush.
They weren't mushy.
Yeah, which is a shame because the taste is so good, but the texture of cooking them in the Instant Pot with the meat is just doesn't do them justice. So, and then you strained out the liquid and made a gravy with it.
Yeah, really simple gravy. I just cooked the liquid down, drained off the fat, and then added a little bit of potato starch.
Yeah. Worked perfectly.
To make a gluten-free gravy.
Yeah. So that was good. That was really good. We had curry tonight, the chicken curry. We've had that a few times recently, so no need to talk about that too much. You had a meatloaf the other night, which was a pretty standard meatloaf, right?
Nothing exciting, nothing special, but it's one of my favorites.
Nowadays, when I was a kid, meatloaf was made in a loaf pan, like bread. But nowadays, and I think a lot of people don't make it in a loaf pan. They form it on a broil pan.
Yeah.
And cook it that way so that the fat drains off. Because in the loaf pan, the fat just collects on the bottom. That's
right.
That is not good eats.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like the way it comes. Like, it's got a nice crust. And because it's not got the pans on the side.
Yes.
It forms a crust on, like, three sides.
Yes.
It's good.
It's good. And everybody likes it. Everybody likes it? Is that 100% meal?
Somebody didn't eat it.
Yeah. Well, there's always somebody. But the big thing was, so when grandma's in town or granddad's in town, your mom and your dad don't come to town at the same time, but mostly I think because we don't have the space for both of them.
We don't have a guest room, so unfortunately they have to sleep on the couch when they come.
Or an air mattress.
Mm-hmm. My dad usually does an air mattress nowadays because he's got a bad back.
And I wish we had a bigger house and they could.
I feel bad. My poor old dad with a bad back sleeping on an air mattress. Or on the couch.
Yeah. Well, air mattress is probably okay, but yeah.
I think he still ends up with a sore back.
Right. I mean, we'd put them in one of the kids' beds, but that would be too small.
Well, yeah, I mean, the kids are in bunk beds, and I think the bunk beds would either be too high or too low. So yeah. Wouldn't really
or
be
too short, too.
Too short.
The office is no good because I'm in here morning, noon, and night. Right. Yeah, so.
And the futon's really no better than the couch.
Right. So, yeah. But anyway, so when mom or dad are in town, we always go out to lunch one day, usually on a Saturday after the farmer's market, to Jake's. Oh, Jake's. Jake's is one of our favorite restaurants, I guess.
It's a seafood shack.
It's not no really shack. A shack, but it's pretty pricey a little bit. I'd say it's a pricey seafood restaurant. So it's in the town of Hull, not Hell, Hull, which is a beach town here in the Boston area. It's hard. People don't really think of Boston as having beach towns, but this is a beach town. It's on a peninsula, a spit of land going right out into the ocean. It's not very wide at all. And there's this famous beach, Nantasket Beach. And right across from Nantasket is Jake's. And Jake's it's built on the side of the seawall so that one wall of it is all windows and face right onto, not onto the ocean, but onto a saltwater reach, really? I mean, saltwater, it's connected to the ocean.
It's like a back bay.
Yeah, it's a small back bay connected to the ocean. Anyway. Beautiful location, beautiful view.
Right on the water.
Really near cool. World's End, which is an amazing natural conservancy. That's a nature conservancy. We'll talk about that another time. We'll actually have to go to World's End soon. That would be fun.
Yes.
We haven't been in a while. And so the kids love it. And everybody loves it. So when we go, they always remember us. We seem to be a memorable family, don't we? We go like once or twice a year at most.
Right. Yeah. The waitress was like, oh, it's been so long since we've seen you. So nice to see you.
Oh, they're all getting so big. I remember when they were teeny tiny. I mean, we've been going ever since we moved to not even ever since we moved to Holbrook, but
for a long time.
Yeah. But we've always gone and they remember us for whatever reason. Hopefully good reasons. The kids are usually pretty well behaved.
They don't seem to be sad or scared to see us.
Right. So. When we go, so they have, first, they have amazing clam chowder, right? Just
right.
Thick, creamy, yummy, clam chowder. It's the best. I'd put it up there with the best. I'm not making a definitive statement here. You cannot hold me to that if I call something else the best clam chowder. It's really good. It's right in my wheelhouse of the kind of clam chowder I like. And then the kids, so what the kids usually get, they have a really good kids menu. They have the typical fried foods thing. So Anthony and Sophie got popcorn shrimp. Ben gets mac and cheese. He professes Jake's to be among his favorite restaurants as a seafood restaurant, but he loves their mac and cheese.
Yeah, it's his favorite place to get mac and cheese.
Is it Kraft, do you think?
I strongly suspect that it's Kraft mac and cheese.
And that's not a bad thing. In fact, the places we've gone where chefs have said, I'm going to spice up our kids menu and make mac and cheese from scratch, not even spice up, just make mac and cheese from scratch for kids, better than that box stuff, it doesn't work. Kids want the box.
At least our kids.
I think a lot of kids want the box.
Yeah. And we've gone to like fancy restaurants where they like do penne with cheese sauce, homemade cheese sauce.
What's the French word? The
bechamel.
Bechamel, you know. Yeah.
And the kids eat like one bite and they go,
I don't know what
horrible.
This is.
I want something else.
So mac and cheese. So Ben gets mac and cheese. What did Bella get? Bella at
right
13,
plants.
She ordered off the adult menu. I told her you're old enough now. If you want, you can order off the adult menu. We're transitioning because she's still, we go to a place like even McDonald's. She gets a Happy Meal. I'm okay with that. Actually, it's because it's cheaper, but we're transitioning and it looks awkward because she looks like an adult because she's so tall.
Yeah.
And then Lucy, given her allergies, is always a struggle to find something for her, but not at Jake's because they had a kid's portion of, get this, broiled salmon. I mean, come on. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, a broiled salmon, which she had with French fries because she adores French fries.
Yes, it's her treat that she can eat. Yes.
And
yes, and it was good.
I had crab cakes, which were very good.
These are really good. These are crab cakes. I think they make them in popover tins or muffin, big muffin tins or something.
Yeah, they had a shape to them. They weren't.
They all like a crust a crust to them.
Yeah. And then I had that with butternut squash and a salad.
Mm. Your mom had bourbon
glazed swordfish.
Yes, bourbon glazed swordfish. I had fried clams because as much as I want to try all the different things, I really love fried clams and I don't get to have them that often. So it's one of those things. There are certain restaurants I go to. Like when we go to the Vietnamese restaurant, I'm like, ooh, look at all this great Vietnamese food. I want to try all the different things. But man, I don't get pho often enough. I'm going to order pho and, that's just going to be what I eat. It's just a thing. This is where Anthony gets his FOMO, his fear of missing out.
Yeah,
I have that. So I had fried clams, which were really good, really good. And then your mom and I got the same beer. We got the 14th Star. It was a stout, breakfast maple stout, which was pretty good. It was actually really good.
I tried it. It was very good. I kind of was sad that I didn't get one, but I have been very, very, very tired the past few days, and that just drinking a beer just didn't seem like a good idea.
Bye, Melody.
I didn't even want one. I was too tired.
Yeah, off to La La Land. Yeah, that would have been you the rest of the day. So
I sacked out the rest of the day, and then I was too tired to make dinner.
Yeah, what did we do in the Saturday afternoon? I had something to do. Did I have something to do when we got back? No, this was...
Yeah, you took the girls to the...
Right, the flea market. No, that was... So so the rest of the day was... We got back from the farmer's market, which was great. And the rest of the day was just a nice day. So we talked about the hammocks. We had the hammocks up in the yard. We had one hammock. And the kids, it was my camping hammock, and the kids had loved it, and everyone's out there. And they were all like, oh, we'd love to. So I looked online. There was another hammock, a different color, that was half off, half price. So I'm like, So I ordered two more hammocks. So now there are three hammocks.
Hammocks in the backyard.
It is like some like hipster Bali resort up there.
This afternoon, Isabella and Sophia took their books out and both laid in the hammocks, and they had a great time.
Oh, by the way, update, Harry Potter update, speaking of books, Sophia, just before bed, finished book 7 of the Harry Potter. So 2 weeks, not even 2 weeks, week and a half, she read all 7 books. And now she can get back to doing her schoolwork.
Thank goodness. I have, it's been pulling teeth to get her to do anything the last week and a half. Anything.
She's consistently where's Sophie? She's some holed up somewhere reading her book.
Yeah. So maybe we can get back to some semblance of normalcy.
Right, right. So speaking of reading and watching things, let's catch up on what we've been reading and watching. I'll go first. I'll mention the two movies I watched.
Okay.
Because that'll be quick. Because they were bad movies and you shouldn't watch them. Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Oh,
not something I would watch anyway.
I mean, the best part was watching Godzilla and this other monster stomp around destroying Boston. Not that I want Boston to be destroyed, but it was kind of funny. Like, Fenway!
At least you recognize what they're destroying.
Oh, look, Godzilla just threw that monster through the Hancock Tower.
I could watch just excerpt of Boston.
If you watch the last 20 minutes, that would be enough. It was so hollow earth. There are tunnels to the earth. These giant creatures were being preached at that we need, that humanity is the disease, that the giant monsters are the cure for. Oh my gosh. Just, it was all this paint by numbers writing. At one point, the bad guy sees, the bad guy and his henchmen, they see one of the dead monsters, and one of the henchmen says, "Mother of God." And the henchman says, "Of course, she has nothing to do with it." What? That doesn't even make any sense. If someone says, "My God, And then you say he had nothing to do with it, meaning this is not of God, but of the devil. I mean, that's sort of the implication. But I'm not sure what that other phrase actually means. All right. So Godzilla, not a good movie. It was such a waste. Then I watched Dark Phoenix, the X-Men movie, which I'm sorry, but the X-Men, I'm lost to the X-Men, because at one point the X-Men was Captain Picard and Gandalf. In the modern, in the year 2000, you know, 10 or whatever, suddenly they're no, we're back in 1965 and now it's 1990 and it's Michael Fassbender and
so is it like Jude Law, like origin what story?
No, it's we've decided to change everything. Like this person in the original movies, Raven, the was a bad guy, but now she's played by Jennifer Lawrence, so she's going to be a good guy. And Magneto was a bad guy, but now he's not really a bad guy, but sort of gray guy.
So this is not like he used to be a good guy, and so we're going to eventually get
back. No. We've it's a reboot, I think. They decided to reboot it from scratch. Although for a while, Hugh Jackman was still Wolverine. He hasn't been in it for a while. He's done. But I think pretty much the way it goes is movies with Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, the X-Men movies with Hugh Jackman, good. X-Men movies without Hugh Jackman, not good. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty clear. At the beginning of this is a solar flare, quote unquote. And, that starts off the whole thing. And I'm looking and going, that's not a solar flare. That the heat is rising because of the solar flare and the space shuttle is going to get cooked. And I'm like, that's not what solar flares do.
I do not think that word means what you think it means.
Yes. I'm like, you can't just like take a word and use it for your own thing. And it turns out it wasn't really a solar flare, but it was some alien energy, blah, 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 whatever it was. It was just an excuse for lots of emoting and a big battle at the end. The Magneto crushing people with metal and, all the aliens, superheroes, I'm sorry, all the superheroes using their superpowers in various unbelievable ways. I don't know. It wasn't good. It was a jumbled mess of a movie. So,
okay.
Sorry, folks. But I'm glad I didn't spend the money to see it in the theater. So before I talk about the book I finished, I'll let you talk about a couple books that one you're working on and when you're finished.
Yes.
Okay.
So I've been slowly working through a couple books, but then I've also been picking up some short juvenile fiction, which goes really quickly. Like you finish it, I read it in a day or two.
I'm going to bulk up my Goodreads reading list for the year with those.
I'm not doing it to bulk up a reading list. I really
no, I will.
Oh yeah, you yeah. Could. I enjoy juvenile novels, and I like to also. I can't keep pace with Isabella and Sophia and Anthony. They read too fast, so they have more free time to read than I do. And I'm also reading like some slower, heavier stuff too. But I like to kind of dig in every once in a while, read some books that they've enjoyed so I can talk about them with them, or read some books that I think they might enjoy so I can make recommendations. And then just because it's fun. So I've read Mariel Trevor is my favorite new author that I've discovered since becoming a mom. She's a Catholic novelist who wrote in the second part of the 20th century. So like 1940s, 50s and on. And she wrote a bunch of kids' books. She also wrote some adult fiction. And she wrote a biography of John Henry Newman. So anyway, the book I read was this week was called The Sparrow Child. And it's about a 13-year-old boy who goes to visit his family in a remote house in Cornwall, like distant family, like his mother's second cousins. But there's a mystery. There's a legend that the Holy Grail is in the house. And so he has three grail related dreams, and there's like secret dark stuff that happened in the family sometime in the past. I mean, this is a kid's book, so it's secret and dark, but not really, really dark.
Mm.
And conflicts, and then there's like family conflicts and it was fun. It was a really good book. And it's the kind of book that I would have loved as a child, because when I was a kid, I did not read any children's books that were just novels that had Catholic characters in them. Like, I read, you know, the Little House on the Prairie books, and those kids were Protestant. And I read Anne of Green Gables, and they're Protestant. And it seemed like almost all the fiction that I read was about Protestant kids. And nothing at all was Catholic, except like books about saints and that sort of thing. But there wasn't just like fun reading. So I would have loved to read books about characters who, you know, they go to mass, they pray. They're not super holy. They have other interests, but it's a part of the texture of their lives. So if you're a Catholic author, write more characters like good.
Don't write Catholic message novels.
Right. But this one, while it had some themes about redemption and forgiveness.
But many good books will have that without it being right. exclusively Catholic.
But, you know, it also had, you know, kids playing in the beach and exploring in the attics and
without the playing in the beach being a parable for something.
Right.
Yeah.
Just fun. I mean, it was kind of a kid adventure story with, you know, lots of interpersonal drama and some mysteries and explorations. The kind of book I really liked to read as a kid.
Yeah, too many self-styled Catholic novelists feel like their novels have to be like they have to be about a hardcore evangelization. They have to be a message. There has to be an allegory for something.
Right. Whereas, you know, when I read Laura Ingalls Wilder or Anne of Green Gables, these books were just about kids living normal kid lives and they had adventures and stuff. But part of the fabric of their lives was occasionally they went to church or said their prayers. And that was just sort of woven into the texture of, well, this is what being a child is. Church is a part of your childhood. And that's what I really liked. But their faith, their experience of faith was not at all matched with mine.
Are these books in print?
The Sparrow Child is not. There are a few of the Mariel Trevor's books that have been re-released. Bethlehem Books released the Letzenstein Chronicles and Sun Slower, Sun Faster mm-hmm. and The Rose Round. Ignatius Press recently released Lights in a Dark Town, which is a novel about a girl who ends up meeting John Henry Newman.
Hmm, interesting. She wrote some interesting stuff about her. During World War II, she worked in a day nursery and later as the steerer of a cargo barge on the Grand Union Canal. I love her already.
Right. She seems to have had an interesting life.
In 1946, she went to Italy as a relief worker after the war and lived for nearly a year in Abruzzi. In Italy, she was exposed to Catholic culture. And previously an agnostic humanist, she was received into the Catholic Church at Oxford in 1950. She received an award for her biography of John Henry Newman. So that must
be which I'm actually slowly reading. I'm on like 50 or 60 pages into the first volume of a huge 2-volume set.
Yeah.
Of John Henry Newman's life.
She's pretty prolific.
She was. And sadly, a lot of her books are not in print. I found The Sparrow Child used on like Abe Books or one of those used book sites.
Right.
I've also read some of her adult novels, which she has a lot of characters who do go back and forth between the continent and England. So there's mm-hmm. like one that's set in Italy that was kind of fun.
There's a website, Open Library. It's part of the Internet Archive mm-hmm. where you can borrow books.
You can borrow them.
Borrow ebooks. They have a number of issues available. I'm not sure how it works. I have to look through it. But you can borrow the books that they have in their open library. There's 72 books of Mariel Trevor's are there. So apparently,
wow,
check it out. So speaking of John Henry Newman, yes. Your other book?
Oh, my other book is actually a book by John Henry Newman. He wrote a novel, which I hadn't even heard about
a novel
recently.
Yeah.
So this is a novel called Loss and Gain, and it's fairly autobiographical. It's about a young man at Oxford University who well, it's pretty clear he hasn't converted yet, but he's obviously on his way to becoming a Catholic, but very, very slowly, gradually. It's not abruptly. I like the pacing of it, sort of. There are a lot of scenes where it's just people talking to each other and arguing about theology. I mean, a lot. And there's a lot of details, which I think at the time that Newman was writing, people would have been much more aware of the various strains of, you know, the factions, the theology, the Oxford movement, the
philosophical things.
Right. And there's a lot of theological discussion and philosophical discussion. And there's a lot of stuff that I really don't have the context to fully understand where people are coming from. And a lot of the conversations, I'm reading at the end of the day and I'm kind of tired and I'm like, okay, this is really interesting. And then it gets kind of hard to follow.
Keeping in mind, this novel was published in 1848. So it's really a, you know, books of that time are of their age.
But it does have very short chapters. So I sort of read a chapter and then put it down and go read something else.
Right.
And I'm making headway. I'm reading it with an online book club, but I'm about a week behind everybody else. So I haven't been participating very much in the conversations, but it is enough of a goad to kind of keep me reading instead of putting it down and doing something else.
Good.
Which is probably what I would do if I didn't have the club, to be honest. I don't have good track record in making myself, like pushing myself to read books that are sort of good for me, improving without somebody else to read with.
Hmm. So that's what we've been reading and watching. So there was one blog post we wanted to talk about. The friend had written, Jennifer Fitz, jennifer.fitz.com, and I'll put a link in the show notes, of course. She often writes about topics related to faith formation, religious education, and parishes. That's what she does.
Right.
Right. So she had a post recently where titled Confirmation as a Near Baptist Experience, which is a compelling headline, where she talks about, well, the bigger picture is this tendency in parishes and dioceses to build barriers to people, to young people receiving the sacraments, obstacles or challenges or making it harder to receive the grace in the sacraments.
Right. This was, I think, the second of a two parts. And the first part was specifically about a lot of parishes that charge a lot for.
Yeah.
For the, especially for not religious ed in general, but especially they charge more for the years in which kids receive sacraments.
Right. It's called, she calls it pay to pray evangelism. And she mentions how, you know, you sign up for first communion class or confirmation, and there are these fees, and then there's sacrament, you know, the not sacrament fees, but, you know, they're fees in order to receive the sacrament. You've got to pay and you got to go through these hoops, and you're always told, well, if you can't afford the registration fees, contact the parish office. And that just is like, well, okay, but a lot of people are going to say, I'm not going to bother because that's embarrassing. Or it's, I don't want to have to beg for that. Or what we're doing is we're building barriers for anyone for whom it's not a driving need. And those are the ones probably who need this the most, or their kids do.
Right. And also, I mean, I suspect that there's probably people who say, well, I can technically afford it, but it's going to make my budget really tight. But I'm sure there's people who need it more, so I'm not going to go to the parish and ask to be let go from the fees, but they're complaining and grumbling, and it's frustration. It's grit that makes everything harder.
Right. Things like, you know, things like baptism, you know, for any Catholic family with more than one kid, we've all experienced this, or many of us have experienced this problem of, all right, we're on our fourth child. We've baptized four children already. Why are you making us jump through hoops to go to another baptism class? We know what happens.
The church has not changed its teaching since the last three kids were baptized.
Now we have to find babysitting for four kids because you require both parents to go there. Now, we've been lucky because we've had priest friends. We were close to our pastors. We've been able to avoid that situation. We went to one baptism class, the first one with Bella. Right? I distinctly remember sitting in a baptism class.
I have no memory of sitting in a baptism class.
Maybe this was when I was in school. It might be when I was in college and I was taking a sacrament class.
I'm pretty sure that
Father Murphy
did not.
He didn't bother.
At the time, you were, as I recall, the director of religious education at the parish.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm pretty sure that he kind of said, you don't need to take the class.
Yeah. So maybe that was the case. Yeah, I was filling in for a year as the director of religious ed. I think it was a college class I was sitting in. No, I was a godfather. I'm thinking way back to like the 80s or 90s.
I've never actually taken a baptism prep class.
Right. Because you don't need to. So there are people who
I could teach the baptism prep class, frankly, and so could you.
Right. But we create these barriers. You know, there's this bureaucracy that people have to, you know, go through the first communion. And I get it. There are some people who need this. They need the friction, a little bit of friction. It's like when a baby bird is being born, if you break the shell apart for them, they won't survive because they need that fight to get out of the shell. And there and maybe there are some people who need a little bit of, you know, if we give the kids everything on a silver platter, appreciate it.
So your theory is that if we give it away for free, then people won't value it. But if they have to pay.
No, I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about if there's a little bit of work involved. If you just had to show up on Sunday, you know, some Sunday and say, here's my kid, confirm him. Would they appreciate it? Would they understand the gift? Would they? And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know what? Just give the sacraments out willy-nilly to whoever asks for them and let grace do the work.
That's kind of where I would lean. But I mean, if I were a bishop.
Yes, that's not happening. But
no, not that I want to.
But if your bishop asks your opinion.
No. But if I were sitting down with a bishop, which, you know, could happen.
Hello, Melanie. This is Cardinal Sean.
Right. And Cardinal Sean asked my opinion about like the sacraments.
Melanie, what should we do with confirmation?
As an opinionated, very opinionated mother of five, I could bend his ear for a bit.
Oh, sure. Melanie, that's a radical suggestion. I don't think so. I agree.
I'm pretty radical. I think that we should go back to giving confirmation.
Infant confirmation
at baptism.
I agree.
Just like the Orthodox and the Byzantine Rite, which are in union with the Catholic Church, they confirm at baptism.
Well, so let's talk about it. What is confirmation? I mean, is it graduation? Well, we're always telling kids confirmation is not Catholic graduation.
Well,
you're not graduating out of religious ed, except you are.
Except some people do actually say it is.
Yes, exactly. You have a grand ceremony. You're an adult now. You make your own decisions, et cetera, et cetera. This is your opportunity now to stop going to mass because you're now an adult in the church.
Yet, if confirmation means that you're an adult now, then what the heck are the Byzantines doing giving it to babies?
Little adult babies.
Right? Like that doesn't.
Right.
Do they have a different theology than we do? They shouldn't.
This is part of the problem is the theology of the sacrament of confirmation is still somewhat undeveloped. It's actually one of those cool things that, you know, 2000 years on, we're still developing doctrine. We're still settling it, figuring it out. And
wait, wasn't it John Henry Newman who talked about the development of doctrine?
I think it was. Wow. This is the John Henry Newman show.
Woohoo.
Hello, Newman. But the sacrament, so what is the sacrament? That's a big question. And it's a sacrament of initiation. It's a sacrament that gives grace. Shouldn't we be giving them the grace to live the faith? What we're doing is we're asking them to live the faith in order to get the grace. I'm sorry, but like it's like asking you to, you know, I'll give you the gas for the car. But first, you got to get the car down to the gas station. I can't get it to there until I have the gas. You want me to push it? This is part of the problem is we're putting the cart before the horse. In some dioceses, they've put it at the time of First Communion. The idea is they're receiving graces there.
And that's not bad. And First Communion is also a sacrament of initiation. So. Right.
And the Byzantines are also doing First Communion at birth.
I think that it would be a little bit trickier for us Latin Rite Catholics to give First Communion to infants, because an infant couldn't chew the host. So we would have to change the way we distribute.
I'm not going to get totally into the theology and practice of the Eastern rites, because I'm not an expert on it. My understanding is that they give the tiniest particle to babies.
Right.
And that they don't really receive again until they're older. Like solid foods able to.
Right. But I've certainly heard of toddlers who are used to going to communion.
I mean, older as in toddler, as in, I'm not talking third grade, but I'm saying there's a period of time after their first communion to when they receive their second communion, usually, is my understanding. I'm sure if you know better, please, I'm sure I'll be getting corrections in email. But in any case, let's give them the grace, like take the barriers away. Oh, you have to do so many service hours. Why? Like, what is it we're trying to do? Like we there may be a good reason to require kids who are about to receive confirmation to do service.
Although I think one of the things that Jen Fitz points out is that confirmation fits us to perform service. Like, it gives us the graces with which we then reach out in service to others. So we're asking them to.
Well, we ask kids to serve their brothers and sisters and their family as practice for what they're going to later do within, you know, in the family context. So if that's what we're doing, is we're giving them an example so that when you are confirmed, this is the sort of thing you will do. And it's a guided experience with other kids and their confirmation leader and that sort of thing. If we had a clear understanding of what it was about. But right now, as far as I can see from most places and most kids, it's a check the boxes requirement. You've just got to make sure that you get someone to sign off on your hours.
Right.
Like it's a bureaucratic exercise.
And oftentimes the parishes aren't actually giving the kids opportunities to serve. No, they're supposed to just go find them themselves.
You're on your own, kiddos. I don't got anything to do here. Or it's things like, you know, go bop the hall. You know, I mean, it's not real service. It's just, you know, functionary work. It's make work. Right. It's not. Where is the spiritual component in it? What are you teaching them?
Which I suppose, I mean, you could say, you know, we're going to St. Teresa of Avila direction. God is in the pots and pans.
But you
have to teach that. You have to connect the dots, and there has to be a teaching moment.
Right.
And I'm not seeing that the teaching moments are really happening.
Exactly. It feels very bureaucratic, formulaic. I mean, this is a clear and present issue for us because Isabella is right on the cusp of confirmation preparation.
Right. In some dioceses, she would have already been confirmed. I mean, there's no unity.
Yeah. For some, it's at 13 or 12, and others are in our diocese. It's usually 15, I think it is. 15, 16.
It's
10th grade.
Sophomore year.
Sophomore year. It's 10th grade. I don't know what that is in ages because we don't have a child in school. So I keep everyone always asks me, what grade are your kids? I don't know. So we're on the cusp of that. And so it's present for us. So what do we do? Do we just sign her up for the parish's confirmation program? Will that be good for her? I mean, Bella she knows her faith. She's living her faith. You know, I mean, she could be a good example for other kids. She could make friends with other kids. That's all good. The social aspect. Sure. That sounds interesting. But, you know, the sacramental spiritual component, the formational component, catechetical aspect. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to have to go to Father Michael and say, Father Michael, look, here's the deal. Bella knows her faith. We want her to receive the graces of the sacrament. All of these requirements are make work. You know, especially as he gets to know her as she serves, you know, you've gotten to know her. Can you just sign her off for confirmation at the next confirmation mass that the bishop is coming to and just be done with it? I don't know if he'd be open to it, frankly. I know some priests I'm very close to who would be, yeah, sure. And I know others who would, no, this is the thing and I'm not going to rock the boat. And that's the way it goes. And I don't know where Father Michael stands on that. We should have him over for dinner. We should become friends with Father Michael. Not that we would have ulterior motives, but as he would get to know us.
We have certainly had previous priests over for dinner.
I love having, that's just another topic maybe for another time, but just to kind of introduce, I love having priests and religious over to our house for dinner so that our children get to know them as people. And they're always interesting people. I love the stories of, you know, the life of the people who have given their life to God through whether ordination or the evangelical councils. I think it's a lovely thing. And you get to know them better. And I would love to get to know Father Michael better because he seems very interesting. I mentioned before, he's from Nigeria. We didn't have a cantor today, so he sang the,
oh my goodness, the Gloria was gorgeous. Like a call and response Gloria. I'd never heard anything quite like
it. It must be like Nigerian in origin because it was beautiful. So.
Yeah, I mean, he talked about like in one of his homilies, he talked about like, raising pigeons as a boy.
Yes.
I want to know more about that.
Right. I want to know more about Father Michael. Anyway, so I'll put the link to Jen's article, her blog post on confirmation as a near Baptist experience. Check it out. Tell us what you think. We'd love to hear your point of view, your feedback, your experiences.
And your confirmation stories.
Yeah, that'd be fun. In your confirmation name. Mine's Dominic, because the priest told us that we had to choose our own name unless we had wrote an essay to choose a different one. And 10th graders, we're not writing essays if we don't have to.
Whereas mine is Rose, after Rose of Lima. And really, I was 13 and I had read very many saint books, and I just liked the name Rose. Roses are pretty flowers, and I feel like kind of slightly guilty. Sorry, Saint Rose.
So you named your child after her.
So yes, our fifth child is Lucia Rose. So now Lucy and I share a saint feast day.
Yes.
And I've since read books. I read a kid's book about Saint Rose to the kids. And so now I feel like I get to know her a little bit. I'm not sure if I were being confirmed today, I would pick St. Rose. But then again, maybe she picked me. Maybe there's a reason why, even though it was kind of silly at 13 to say I like roses. Maybe there's a spiritual lesson that I'm still
there. You go
to learn. Who knows?
And maybe I needed St. Dominic to be my patron twice over. So before we finish up, we get some feedback I want to read to you. This was not an email. This is an iTunes review, a podcast review. And again, we've asked before, and we would greatly appreciate if you're enjoying the show, go to the Apple Podcast or iTunes or any podcast directory and write a review of the show there. It helps let other people know that it might be something worth listening to. So here's a review from listener Kristen.tfc. who wrote, "I'm raising a family far away from my roots. I've discovered this podcast and feel like it's going to be helpful in encouraging me to hold fast to my beliefs in the Southern California culture. It takes a village to raise children, and Dom and Melanie are part of my village now."
Aw,
welcome,
really
Kristen.
Sweet.
Can I be chief of the village? Oh, no, shaman. I want to be the shaman in the village. Sorry.
Okay.
I feel privileged to be part of your village, Kristen. And
yes,
thank you.
Likewise.
I'd love to have you on board as a listener. We appreciate it. All right. So that's it from us. What did you think of our discussion of any of the things we've talked about? Let us know by visiting sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send us an email to bets@sqpn.com. And like I said, I'll put the link to our discussion on our show notes at sqpn.com. If you can, if you're listening to this as a file someone sent to you or something like that, be sure to subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio, your favorite podcast app, or on the SQPN YouTube channel, where you should hit the bell to get notifications. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.